Welcome to In Season, where we explore connections between people, land, plants, and wildlife here in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and joining me in the studio today is my dear friend, gardener and chef Andy Catalano. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Teresa. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to be talking to you. I feel like this has been a long time coming, and this is so timely. I was thinking about this show, and you immediately came to mind, because what I want to talk about now, we're entering kind of like the height of summer. It's August, and everyone's gardens are really starting to kick in now. The farms, the gardens, produce is hopping. If it's going to hop, it's going to hop now.
Mm-hmm.
And you have both a garden, but you are also an amazing chef. And so I want to talk about your garden for sure, but I want to also talk about what do we do? What are your ideas for what do people do with all of that abundance that starts to come in? Maybe it's from your own garden. Maybe it's a neighbor that has an amazing garden. We'll talk about zucchini.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to dig in first to your garden. So you garden here in Astoria.
I do.
What would you say is your microclimate where you are? Because are you South Slope? Are you Upper Town?
We are in Uniontown.
Uniontown.
A little bit up the hill,
mm-hmm.
West Exchange. So what we have is some good sun for not a long time. In the height of summer, it's about a half day of sun. And we also have a constant breeze coming up the hill off the water. So I find that it can be challenging without having windbreaks throughout the garden. The soil can dry out. Little seedlings can get a little bit abused by the breeze. But over, 11 years of living there, I've found the microclimates and the little pockets that do get full sun, where you can grow sunflowers and tomatoes and all the hot weather crops. But it's a matter of being strategic and also really listening to the garden. And it's been amazing over, 11 seasons of gardening, just having some input in the spring and then pretty much walking away and just seeing what happens. By this time every year, I am done gardening. I'll try to go out and water regularly, but beyond that, it's just seeing what drop seed where and, let the garden decide.
What have you found has been some of the most successful things that just whether you wanted them to be or not, but like what's done well for you?
Yeah, when I first moved to the North Coast, I was amazed at the varieties of kale and how they flourish here. And after a couple of years of being enamored of that, I tried to move away from it and grow other things, which I do, but gosh, it's hard not to come back to kale every year, largely because the kale keeps coming back every year. I got a variety from you many years ago, Dazzling Blue. I got some seeds from you, and
I love that variety.
They did pretty well the first year, and then the next spring, I noticed little seedlings popping up in a different bed because I had just let the plants go to seed. I rarely, pull things out when they're done, when it's time to pull them out. I just let them go through their life cycle. And ever since then, it's probably been 5 years now, the Dazzling Blue kale just moves around the garden from bed to bed every year. And I don't
so
have to
it's
do
rotating it. Itself.
It is. Yeah, it totally is. And I don't have to do anything. I just, pick it. It's one of the first things that's ready for harvest in the spring because it gets such an early start because it is like, it's choosing its location where it can flourish.
It's fascinating too. Like plants will also tell us when it's okay mm-hmm. to plant them. Because mm-hmm. when you see the kale seedlings starting to pop up,
right.
that's always a trigger for me to know, oh, yeah, it's safe to plant these things outside because this is surviving.
That's another thing I've learned is initially I would really, I'd get the grow lights out and I'd start my tomato seedlings in February and then I'd nurse them for 12 weeks, 16 weeks, whatever it was, until it was finally time to put them out. And I'd even push that schedule. I'd get them out in May, early May sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and they would just struggle for a solid month. And then I talked to you and I think you told me June 1st is kind of your safe time.
It's usually when I have it together to get them in the ground. I mean, and I feel good about that, but then they do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is.
But it's like, there's all this coddling
mm-hmm.
to get them to the point where they can survive
or
I can just wait until that point and
then
they'll do just fine and they'll catch up with the other ones.
Absolutely. Start your seeds later. I've learned that over the time, you can really, be in a hurry to get things in the ground. And a lot of times those early months, March April can be so cold here and so changeable. Mm-hmm. And I've found sometimes I've planted, you know, like a kale plant at the beginning of March, feeling really proud of myself, got it in the ground. Mm-hmm. And I'll plant another round at like the end of March, and they'll mature at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that one that you planted at the beginning has just been sitting there shivering in the soil, mm-hmm. not growing, mm-hmm. and waiting for the soil to warm up.
Yeah.
So your instincts are totally right.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I like to garden in the off season. Like, I like to be out there when it's cold and wet. I like to be out there in the spring. I like to be out there in the fall. And you can really see when I'm out there every day in the spring, like I can see those little seedlings just not doing anything, just hanging on for dear life. And then suddenly,
it's like a switch.
They just come to life. Yeah.
You've added an extra curve of challenge in your garden. I can't remember how many years it is now, but your lovely wife, Sarah, runs a school out mm-hmm. of your home, the mm-hmm. West Exchange School. And so you have kids all over this garden.
Yes.
All the time. I loved the analogy that you made as we were chatting earlier today, because I was like, what is it like having the kids in the garden all the time? And what did you describe them as?
It's like having deer inside the fence. In the best possible way. I mean, first of all, hearing the laughter and the yelling and the joy that is like emanating from the garden every day is just magical.
But
having a garden, you know, is not without its challenges, because I have a vision of what I want to happen in the garden this year. And then I have the reality of 25 other people and their visions and their interactions with the garden. And it's just a matter of balance and kind of surrendering. Again, like the plants choose where they want to be. There's also the children who have every right to exist happily in the garden as well. So, yeah, you know, I'll try to do some things, and then I'll consciously tell myself to step away and just let them have fun. And we have a slide in the garden now, so that helps with the fun factor.
I just love that description, because I have definitely had kids in the garden in my farm and watch them move through and just taste things, which mm-hmm. I love watching. I mean, mm-hmm. that is so magical. Kids seem to be more willing to try something if they're standing out in a garden and they can just pull it off a plant and put it in their mouth.
Yeah. If
you put on a plate in front of them at a table, they'll be like, I don't like that.
They love broccoli from the garden. Like, they just freaked out when the broccoli was sprouting this spring.
Yeah.
And they just... Everybody was just
eating it in the garden.
Just eating it raw all day. Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of these kids don't touch broccoli at the dinner table.
See, and that is so fascinating to me. But that's such a great reason to let kids mm-hmm. just graze in a garden. And you know that sometimes they're going to eat things that are not ripe.
Yeah.
Or they're going to find things that they don't like. I mean, I've also seen a lot of kids tasting tomatoes for the first time and doing that, like putting it in their mouth and chewing it and being like, bah. And then, like, spitting it out on the ground. Sorry, that was probably a really gross sound effect. But it is kind of like, oh, okay, I guess you're one of those, you don't like tomatoes. That's cool. And a lot of kids don't, you know, and a lot of people don't.
I didn't as a kid. Yeah, I couldn't stand them.
But then also watching them, like, pick a snap pea mm-hmm. or, you know, pick a strawberry or something like that. Or pull a carrot out of the ground and just brush a little dirt mm-hmm. off of it and eat it. And just their minds are blown.
Yeah. I have to say, West Exchange School has a very clear policy about not eating anything in the garden that you don't recognize.
That's good.
But there are times when we can taste through the garden. And yeah, just watching the kids, their curiosity, and gosh, their knowledge is amazing. I didn't know a thing about botany into mm-hmm. my 20s, probably. And they can identify, they know exactly what they can eat, what's what, you know, it's really impressive to watch these kids just be at home in the garden. And then, the balance that I try to strike is I try to set the garden on a good trajectory so there will be things mm-hmm. to taste and to engage the senses later in the season, and then let them have their way with it.
Are you able to, is there enough for you to cook from in your garden?
There has been in the past. This year, I've taken a fairly hard and involuntary pivot to flowers and my vegetables. This has been a rough year. The first few years I was gardening, it was all about building the soil health. I was kind of like geeking out on soil. And then a few years later, I got into kind of the architecture of the garden, and I did a lot of, like, I would move beds around. So, you know, it would work with the school, with the kids kind of flowing through the garden. And I did less with soil development. And this year, I did a last minute in the spring reposition of some beds, and so I had to bring in some bag soil, and it's just that stuff is not good.
Yeah.
It's just not ready for, you know, it has to break down more. And so, yes, most of my vegetables have not done well. But the flowers have been beautiful, and kids like flowers just as much as vegetables,
yeah,
it turns out.
And many flowers are edible, so that's good too.
Yeah. So I'm leaning on local growers like yourself,
yeah,
Sunday Market, to stock us with produce this year.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, this is also like the peak season at farmers markets. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people get their produce there. You know, I mean, not everyone grows at home. And oftentimes you don't have enough of a garden space, or maybe you don't have a productive year. So it's nice to know that there is backup. And there are so many great farmers markets all up and down the coast.
Mm-hmm.
They're just loaded now with just going into that height of summer abundance. And but also many times either you or a neighbor or a friend might be having a very abundant growing season for particular crops. And I want to talk to you a little bit, like, what are some of your favorite things to cook from, or what are the easy ways to just take some of that abundance and process it into either a good meal, a good salad? Are there ways that you like can quickly preserve stuff that aren't super complicated, maybe don't take a lot of time? People often don't feel like cooking this time of year.
Yeah.
You've got all this stuff.
Yes. And I want to talk about zucchini, but first, when you said pickle, I thought about eggplant, because eggplant's coming on pretty strong now, and it's not something that a lot of people think about, I think, when it comes to pickles or preserves.
I don't think about them that way.
Yeah. So this one, I just remembered this recipe that I used to make a lot back at Street 14, but it's a very traditional Italian way of preserving eggplant, especially in the South where it grows very abundantly. And it's very simple. It takes a little bit of time, but it's very simple, and you can really process a lot of eggplant this way. So you slice it, quarter inch thick maybe, doesn't really matter. Salt it. Weigh it down to just draw out as much of that moisture as you can.
Because the salt brings the moisture out of the...
Yep, exactly. Okay. And eggplant is pretty loaded with moisture. And the longer you can leave that, the better. I mean, a couple hours out at room temp, or put it in the fridge overnight. You really want to draw a lot of moisture out. And then dry it.
Paper towels.
Mm-hmm. Towels, yes. Toss it with vinegar, any kind of vinegar, just to lightly dress it. And then pack it in jars with olive oil and cloves of garlic, and you really want to like push that eggplant down into the jar, add the olive oil incrementally so it really seeps into all the nooks and crannies, and then put it in the fridge for at least a week, preferably longer, and then it really starts to get good after a couple weeks, and it's just delicious on its own, chopped up in a pasta and a salad.
It sounds so good.
It is really wonderful.
And
oil and vinegar, it tastes tangy, it tastes rich, it tastes fresh, it's really...
Is that, I mean, and will it keep in the fridge for quite a while?
I keep it in the fridge pretty much indefinitely. I mean, a month.
Yeah.
But
you're probably used it up by then.
Yeah.
Because
it
sounds fantastic.
Yeah. It's very good.
That is a great tip. I often do have a lot of it. Well, I mean, eggplant's a harder one to grow outside here, but it's often abundant in the markets. And I know we have a lot on the farm, and I usually end up having like a big batch of it, and I'm like, what am I going to do with this? So I'm going to try that this year. That sounds fantastic.
And everybody knows about eggplant parm, but just a plug here, eggplant parm is one of the most delicious dishes in the world. I just made it last night for my daughter's birthday. She requests it every year.
Oh.
And you can go through a lot of eggplant that way, and it's so good.
That is, I mean, so I feel like at this point, okay, so I want to first, for people who are just joining us for Today's in Season, I'm going to reintroduce you before we really delve into the vegetable at hand. So if you're just joining us today for In Season, I'm talking with Andy Catalano. He is a chef, a gardener, an amazing person all around. And if you've ever been lucky enough to get to eat a meal cooked by Andy or prepared in some way, you will know what an amazing cook he is. And we're kind of talking about abundance in the garden in the season right now. It's the height of summer. And the one, it's a joke, but also it's true. We have to talk about zucchini.
We do.
Because it just starts to come on this time of year. And I'm finding like I have to go out. I probably should be going out every day. It's at least every other day and harvesting so that they don't turn into the enormous baseball bats. We can talk a little about what you do with those enormous bat ones, you know, the 2 or 3 pounders. But I mean, I feel like there's also some zucchini etiquette. Like, because, you know, there's a joke, you know, don't leave your car unlocked because you'll be loaded with zucchini this time of year. And, I, you know, like, so, for example, I brought Andy some zucchini today. But I asked, would you like some? Are you growing any? And he said, no, I'm not growing it this year. I'm like, would you like some zucchini? And he said, yes. And so I brought him some zucchini, not too much, but some, you know, enough for him to do some things with. And I think this is proper zucchini etiquette between friends, between neighbors. Check and make sure, because not everyone likes zucchini. And not everyone wants, like, 8 pounds of it on their porch.
Very true.
But it is an amazing vegetable, and there's so much you can do with it.
It is so good. And, I mean, quick plug for Drive Farm Zucchini. Teresa is, oh my gosh, can you just say a little bit about what dry farming entails?
Well, I grow my zucchini dry farmed, so this is without any irrigation. And I started doing this back in 2016. It was part of a trial with Oregon State University's Small Farms Program, who was exploring, like, growing without irrigation, kind of trying to respond to increasing droughts and more extreme weather conditions. And I just remember the first year that I planted it and was growing it and didn't water it, I was convinced they were all going to die. I did not think that this would work. And we had this incredibly abundant year, and the zucchini was amazing. It was so delicious. There's something about the dry farming. So it's not loaded with moisture.
Right.
And it is drier and firmer, but it's not dry. It's just very firm and really flavorful. And I would say, like, even if you're not dry farming, you probably don't have to water your zucchini as much as you think you need to water it. And the nice thing about it, I think, is you get a more steady growth. So it's like overnight, it's not going to go from a decent sized zucchini to, you know, a 3 pounder. It grows more slowly, but they can still produce an awful lot. And it is. It's very firm. You can grill it really well. Like, it doesn't fall apart.
Yeah.
Pickles really nicely. I've been, like, slicing it very thinly, putting it on sandwiches, putting it in quesadillas.
Yeah. So this
it.
Is this is the platonic ideal of zucchini. It's so good.
I think
those who don't have dry farm zucchini, it tends to be loaded with moisture. And one of the big challenges is how to get that moisture out without cooking the zucchini to mush. And I have a couple ideas.
All right. I want to hear them.
So first of all, there is a noticeable difference, as we all know, between early season and late season vegetables, and that's pretty stark with zucchini. If you can get the smaller ones, they tend to be firmer fleshed. They get a little spongy as they get bigger. There's things you can do with zucchini at every stage, but really those early season ones or even the medium-sized ones are kind of where you want to get them in their sweet spot. But there's a salad I've been making this year that it's another one that I used to make years ago that I forgot about. But it's in the style of like a Thai green papaya salad. So you shave the zucchini. If you have a mandolin, that's great. You can use a knife, but
You want it thin.
You want it thin. Yeah, maybe
like in rounds,
eighth
or?
Of an inch. Oh, so do it lengthwise.
Oh, so long ribbons.
Long ribbons, and then salt those. Lay them on a towel-lined sheet tray for a few minutes. Pat them dry, and then you make a dressing with fish sauce.
Okay.
Chopped fresh chilies, lime juice, and a little bit of sugar.
Ooh.
So it has those kind of Southeast Asian flavors. And then you toss the zucchini with that dressing, cherry tomatoes, a ton of herbs, basil, mint, finely sliced scallions. And it is just like, it's zucchini like I've never had it before. It's so fresh and so vibrant. It has all the magic of Southeast Asian cuisine, but you don't have to find green papaya.
That sounds so good. And the zucchini is still firm.
It's still firm, but it's like, it has a little bit of a bite to it. But it's very well seasoned because you salted it and let it sit and then removed the moisture, but you kept the salt in there. So it tastes like of zucchini. It's a great salad.
That sounds so
good. To have
good.
In the rotation.
Yeah.
And then another thing I've been doing, which again works well for small zucchini, but could work with any stage, is zucchini alla scapece, which is a southern Italian dish reminiscent of escabeche in Spanish cuisine. So again, you slice the zucchini. It can be very thin. It can be, you know, up to a half inch thick. And then you either fry it or you just roast it in the oven, really high heat, without salt. Because you want to, when you're browning vegetables, if you salt it beforehand, it'll remove moisture and it'll turn more to a steamed vegetable. So you want to roast it or fry it unsalted, and then you want to salt it and just pop it in a little bit of vinegar and fresh mint and garlic and just give it a toss and then eat it right away or let it sit for a few hours. And it's like this kind of slightly pickly, marinated, but still very fresh from the mint. And man, you can go through zucchini that way.
That sounds so good.
It's really,
and really
delicious.
Easy.
It's like, I mean, it's like the epitome of, it's quintessential rustic Italian food because it's so simple to make and it's just like a flavor bomb. It's just packed with deliciousness.
And it sounds like pretty flexible with the seasonings too, or the flavorings.
Yep.
It's like some of this, some of that. I know sometimes that makes people uncomfortable cooking without a recipe and without firm numbers and things like that. But I think if you can get comfortable with just like, just trying some stuff like this.
Well, that's what this season is all about, is like you have such abundance. So don't worry if it, if it doesn't go as planned. I mean, now's the time to like
experiment.
Just have fun in the kitchen and try something new. There's always going to be more zucchini on your doorstep.
Yeah, this is true. I know with some of those larger ones, I love stuffing them.
Yeah, zucchini boats.
You know, where
you
kind of like scrape out the interior and then chop that up and saute that, you know, with onions and peppers, tomato. Sometimes like I'll use a ground sausage, like a pork sausage or something. Or you can make them vegetarian, you know, pack that back in, put like some breadcrumbs and cheese on top and roast it. Oh, those are so good. But then also just like shredding it or grating it and then using it for baking. And there's so much, I mean, the zucchini bread is great, but there is a world of baking with zucchini beyond zucchini bread. I've make a really good chocolate cake with zucchini.
Yes.
And it like absorbs like 3 cups of grated zucchini. This is one of the things I love to do with those big guys. And you can't even taste the zucchini in it. You can't see it. So it's a great way to sneak zucchini in to people who don't like zucchini. Happy to share this recipe with anyone if you want to reach out. It's really great. And it does use up a lot of zucchini.
Yeah, that's
but
a great
idea. So there are ways. There are ways you can do it. Tell me a little bit about quick pickles, because that could work for a lot of veg this time of year.
Like, absolutely.
What's the basics behind a quick pickle? So this is one you're not going to can. You're just going to keep it in the fridge.
Exactly. Yeah. So I tend to stick more or less to a ratio. So a quick pickle is just a vinegar preserved vegetable. So I tend to stick to a basic ratio of, let me see if I remember it, 3 parts. Okay, so this is going to get funny because I used to do 3 parts vinegar, 1 part sugar, 1 part water, and then just bring that to a boil, pour that over your thinly sliced vegetable, whatever it is, let it cool at room temp, and then put it in the fridge, and it'll be good for a couple weeks in there. Recently, I inverted that formula, and I did 3 parts water, 1 part vinegar, 1 part sugar, and that one made for a much gentler but like easier to eat right away pickle, because the vinegar heavy formula made for a longer lasting pickle and maybe a more delicious one in 3 weeks, but right away it was pretty pungent and like a little tough to
eat. So if you're going to eat it right away.
If you're going to eat it right away, bring the vinegar down, bring the water up, but it's really vinegar, sugar, water, salt. Those are your 4 components. And you can play with the levels, you can play with the type of vinegar. It's just important that you bring it up to a boil, pour it over the veg, and then let it cool slowly.
And this could be good for zucchini, obviously, but cucumbers, carrots,
I mean,
onions,
any
vegetable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, and, but these have to be.
With the exception of leafy greens, anything in a jar,
So, and this would just have to be kept in a fridge. Like, you would not water bath can this. This
is
not for canning.
This
is
not for long-term storage at all. Yeah.
Disclaimer.
This is to be enjoyed in the next couple of weeks. Yeah. Or the next week, according to the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Yes.
But a couple of weeks in the fridge. Yeah.
So I just want to briefly check in on tomatoes. Because what do you like to do with tomatoes besides just slice them in? Or do you like tomatoes still?
I love tomatoes.
You said you didn't like them as
a
kid.
But I came around. So funny about tomatoes, are you getting a lot of tomatoes yet?
They're slow.
Yeah.
They're slow to start this year. It's been, it's definitely been slow, but they're starting to come on.
I got to the Sunday market at 9:30 on Sunday and the tomatoes at Spring Up were already sold out.
I'm not surprised.
It's a slow start.
It has been a slow start,
but
when they're coming.
Yeah. What I've been into this year is cherry tomatoes is really all I've gotten so far, but just doing quick roasted cherry tomato sauces, for pasta. I've been experimenting with different pasta shapes and trying to keep the sauce simple to like explore the pasta. So a couple pints of tomatoes on a sheet tray, drizzle of olive oil, and then into like a 450, 500 degree oven for, gosh, maybe 15 minutes, just until they blister
they
and they start to break down a little bit, but they still have some integrity. And then tip them right into a pan, add your pasta, your cooked pasta, some fresh basil, some parm, and it's like...
Okay, I'm literally salivating.
I mean, it's so good. It has all the umami of tomatoes, but it's so fresh too.
Yeah, tomatoes. I feel like in some ways, the less you do to them,
yes, that's
the better.
The
although
thing,
they do cook really well into sauces. And I often, if I have a lot of tomatoes, which I do sometimes, mm-hmm. I'll roast them in a pan and then put them in the freezer mm-hmm. for later. It's nice to have a stash later on. And you can freeze tomatoes whole or freeze cherry tomatoes whole, you know, and then keep them and like take them out in January. And then it's really nice to have a little stash if you do have abundance.
I do want to put a plug in for a panzanella with charred bread. This is probably not news to a lot of people, but a tomato salad with really, okay, all you have to do, you can complicate a tomato salad, a panzanella as much as you want, mm-hmm. or you can keep it very simple. And I recommend keeping it simple with good tomatoes, roughly chopped, vinegar, salt, black pepper, let it sit in a bowl for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then good bread, torn up. You got to tear it. You can't cut it because you want to maximize the surface area. Throw that into a hot, hot oven or even a cast iron pan. Get it like dark brown, black in some spots. So it's really roasty on the outside, but still soft on the inside. When it's still hot, rub it with a garlic clove.
The bread. Okay.
The big torn croutons. And then add those to the marinated tomatoes. Throw in whatever herbs you want. And that's like just the best taste of summer.
I'm so glad we had this conversation because you've definitely inspired me to try some new things, which is always great because I don't like to cook this time of year because I'm so tired. But these are really simple ideas. And I just encourage people to go out and explore, you know, try things that you've never, if you go into a farmer's market, maybe try some veg you've never tried before. There's lots of simple ways to explore and take advantage of your garden, your neighbor's gardens. It doesn't have to all be zucchini. We didn't even go into fruit. I mean, fruit's another whole topic and jams and all things like that. So, I mean, Andy, thank you so much. I do want to mention, so you've worked for a number of years with North Coast Food Web, and I know you're still doing some consulting with them, but you just recently moved off into a new venture. And tell me the name of your...
I have. Yeah, it's called Well Seasoned.
Well Seasoned. And you're doing sort of home chefing.
So I do meal prep, and I also do kind of catered events, private dinners, celebrations, birthday parties, whatever you want good food for.
Yeah.
I'll be happy to do it.
I urge you to check out his website. It's really beautiful. And if you want to know more about Andy and what he does, that's a great way to connect and find out. He is just a wellspring of information. I want a cookbook at some point because
let's do it.
Andy, this would be really good. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and stories from your garden. And thanks to everyone who is listening. I hope we've inspired you to get out there and savor the season. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Thank you so much.
Eat good meals. Take care. Thank you.